Hey there. Before we get into today's episode, I have a question for you. Are you on non-speaking terms with someone in your family? Or are you in a challenging family relationship that's made you or your loved one consider cutting off ties? We're working on an episode for our interview show, Apple News in Conversation, about estrangement within families. And we want to hear your stories. Use your iPhone's voice memo app to record yourself. Tell us your name, where you're from, and your experience. And please try to keep it to about a minute or so. You can send it to us at inconversation@apple.com. Again, that's inconversation@apple.com. And we might include your voice on the show. Thanks. Good morning. It's Wednesday, November 13th. I'm Shimita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, what Latino voters see in Trump's promises, how a U.S. ultimatum against Israel came and went with no consequences, plus a new agency to make the government more efficient will have two leaders. But first, a woman in Michigan was recently awarded $12 million in a court case over workplace COVID vaccine mandates. It's a ruling that pits religious freedom against public health, and there are hundreds more cases like it making their way through courts around the country. During the pandemic, Lisa Domsky worked at the health insurance company Blue Cross Blue Shield, which, like a lot of employers, required all employees to get the COVID vaccine unless they had some kind of medical or religious exemption. Domsky is Catholic and said she believed the vaccines used fetal cells obtained from abortions, which goes against her religious beliefs. The major vaccine companies have all confirmed their vaccines do not contain any fetal cells made from aborted fetal DNA. So she asked for a religious exemption, which Blue Cross denied. Domsky was fired after working at the company for 32 years. Her lawyer told Fox News that she worked remotely during the pandemic and should have been excluded from the vaccine policy. Now, a federal jury has awarded Domsky over $12 million for back pay, lost future wages, and other damages, saying the company discriminated against her based on her religion. The company is considering an appeal. There are at least 180 other people bringing similar cases against Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan alone, and many more cases throughout the country. Reuters reports many of these plaintiffs are winning. One of the very first came in June, when a federal jury in Chattanooga awarded a woman close to $700,000 against Blue Cross Blue Shield of Tennessee. Here's her attorney, Doug Hamill, speaking with a local ABC affiliate.
Healthcare workers, like frontline nurses, they sometimes are mandated to have vaccines as a requirement for their job. But this was different because my client, as most employees of Blue Cross, are not healthcare workers. You know, Blue Cross is an insurance company.
This plaintiff was a data scientist at the company who argued that she should be allowed to work from home because she rarely interacted with clients. The company later defended its vaccine requirement policy, arguing it keeps their workforce safe. These lawsuits are coming at a time when vaccination rates nationwide have been declining. As of late October, just under 15% of adults said they received the latest COVID booster, according to the CDC. Public attitudes about vaccines more broadly are shifting as well. According to Gallup, just 40% of Americans say it's extremely important to have their children vaccinated, down from nearly 60% just 5 years ago. One big skeptic of vaccines is Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who is in President-elect Donald Trump's inner circle and who Trump has suggested he might put in charge of health policy moving forward. It's been a month since the Biden White House gave Israel an ultimatum: boost aid access to Gaza within 30 days or face losing some U.S. military support. And while Israeli officials say they opened an additional crossing into Gaza, the UN says not nearly enough has been done. 1,000 Palestinians have been killed in the past month alone, and many people are on the brink of starvation. Yesterday, the Biden administration suggested Israel has taken a number of steps and announced it would take no action to reduce the aid our government sends. Brown University's Costs of War Project estimates the U.S. government has spent around $18 billion on Israel's military operations since the start of its war with Hamas. During a press conference yesterday, journalists pushed the State Department on the ultimatum.
If we don't see steps being taken, we, of course, will appropriately enforce U.S. law. But correct me
if I'm wrong. Isn't that what you guys said a month ago?
That is what we said a month ago, and that is why we laid out.
And they have not yet met them, because you say that they have made some, taken some steps, but more needs to be made. In other words, they have not
met
the criteria by the deadline, and you are giving them a pass. Is that, I don't understand. There's no other way to look at it.
A major concern for humanitarian workers is people's access to food and water. Experts say North Gaza is on the brink of famine. The BBC spoke to one Palestinian woman about where she gets her meals.
If it were not for the soup kitchen, we would have starved to death. Every day it's the same struggle. I go back and forth to the soup kitchen.
When the BBC asked an official with the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees about the state of the crisis, they were explicit in saying Israel has failed to meet America's ultimatum.
There is not enough aid here. There is not enough supplies. People are starving in areas. People are very hungry. They are fighting over bags of flour. There is just not enough supplies.
Now the region is in wait-and-see mode as President-elect Donald Trump prepares to take office. On the campaign trail, Trump said he wants Israel to end the war quickly, and he vowed to be Israel's protector. And yesterday, he nominated former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee to become the next U.S. ambassador to Israel. Huckabee has been a longtime supporter of Israel. In 2017, he visited the West Bank and was asked about Israeli settlements on Palestinian land.
My feeling personally, and I'm speaking only as a person, I think Israel would only be acting on the property it already owns. I think Israel has title deed to Judea and Samaria. There are certain words I refuse to use. There is no such thing as a West Bank. It's Judea and Samaria. There's no such thing as a settlement.
According to Peace Now, a nonprofit organization, Israel has seized more land in the West Bank this year than any time over the past three decades. The war in Gaza, meanwhile, has left more than 40,000 people dead and displaced almost all of Gaza's 2.2 million residents. One of the biggest demographic shifts we saw in this election was among Latino voters. Vice President Harris won a majority of Latino voters nationwide, but according to exit polls, Donald Trump picked up far more Latino votes than in previous elections. He even won in Starr County, Texas, a county that's called the single most Latino place in America and has voted for a Democrat in every presidential election in more than a century up until last Tuesday. Jack Herrera has been reporting on Starr County, among other majority Latino counties around the country, to understand what drove their vote in 2024. And he recently wrote for Politico about some of the grievances he's been hearing from this community.
You're talking to people who are like, hey, the price of eggs went up. The price of milk went up. Last time I went to the gas pump, I couldn't fill my truck all the way up. I didn't have the money. Inflation was really keenly felt in these communities, which are overwhelmingly working class, overwhelmingly underserved.
Immigration was the other motivating issue. Unauthorized crossings at the U.S.-Mexico border surged during the first 3 years of Biden's presidency. Since December, asylum restrictions implemented by the administration have slashed the number of illegal crossings by 78%, bringing them lower than the rates from the end of Trump's first term. But for communities along the border, the strain on their resources was too great.
There weren't enough seats at the bus station, weren't enough flights to get them out at the airport. Local shelters were overwhelmed. Border Patrol was overwhelmed. And so you really see a sort of a chaotic situation. And that definitely rubbed people the wrong way, just those scenes of chaos. It's not even that people are coming over. It's that, oh my gosh, like my town can't handle this.
While many of these voters believe President-elect Trump when he says he will be able to get the border under control, Herrera says there are mixed feelings about Trump's promises to launch the largest deportation program in history.
There are plenty of Latinos who want that to happen, are happy with it, but there are others who didn't really take that threat seriously when they voted for Trump.
For that latter group, Herrera says, they think that Trump's talk of deporting immigrants is just grandstanding, and it won't target their families.
These communities, all of the ones I've reported from, people are living in households where somebody's undocumented, even if everyone else is a citizen. People who are in that situation and voted for Trump, they have the sense that Trump is going to prioritize quote-unquote criminals, that he's not going to come for my grandma. He's just coming for like the gang members or the people who have arrived in the last 4 years. And Trump's team, the people around him, like Tom Homan, who's now become the border czar under Trump, was just named the border czar, he's been very clear that he's coming for as many people as he possibly can.
In an interview this week with Fox News, Homan suggested that immigrants who are here illegally should self-deport ahead of the mass deportations that are coming. If they don't do it themselves, Homan says, under the Trump administration, they'll be deported and never allowed back in. Before we let you go, a few other stories being featured in the Apple News app. Today, President-elect Trump visits the White House for a meeting with President Joe Biden. Trump will also meet with congressional GOP leaders. It comes after Trump announced more appointments yesterday, including Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy, to head up a new Department of Government Efficiency tasked with cutting government spending. Trump has also tapped Pete Hegseth, a combat veteran and Fox News host, to be his defense secretary, and John Ratcliffe, a former House lawmaker, to lead the CIA. Meanwhile, as news outlets continue to crunch the data from the election, the Washington Post found one interesting trend. Come January, just three states will have split party representation in the Senate, sending senators from two different political parties: Maine, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. The Post says this is the lowest number of states with split Senate delegations since Americans began directly electing senators more than a century ago. And finally, a federal jury found a U.S. defense contractor liable for its role in the torture of prisoners held at the Abu Ghraib prison during the Iraq War. The contractor, Khaki International, was ordered to pay $14 million in damages to each of the three plaintiffs. Reuters notes it's the first time a civilian contractor was held legally responsible for torture at the prison, largely considered one of the greatest stains on America's military operations in the so-called War on Terror. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the news app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. The New Yorker looks at what the anti-abortion movement looks like within a Republican Party that's acknowledged abortion bans are not popular. If you're listening in the podcast app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.